Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as always, is Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program. We are now in chapter 30 of Prema Vahini. In the last three episodes, we discussed little segments of this chapter. In fact, the previous week, the last week, we could not have a session because that was a convocation day and we were very busy with doing a lot of work related to that, and the Monday session also got delayed, but we are happy we are back to chapter 30 of Prema Vahini. So we move on today to the fourth segment of chapter 30. Let us listen to what Bhagwan has written and then we will see how he guides our thoughts.
Navavidha bhakti margamulalo namasmarana sreshtamainadi. Atti namame కలిలో కడచేర్చునట్టి మార్గము. జయదేవ, గౌరాంగ, త్యాగయ్య, తుకారాం, కబీర్, రామదాసు ఇట్టి పరమభక్తులందరూ ఒక్క నామము వల్లనే పరమాత్ముని పొందిరి. వేయేల ప్రహ్లాద ధ్రువులు సహితము ప్రత్యక్ష దర్శన స్పర్శన సంభాషణలను పొందగలిగినది భగవన్నామము వల్లనే కదా. కాన ప్రతి సాధకుడు భగవన్నామమును శ్వాసవలే భావించుకుని పరోపకార దీక్ష సర్వజన సమాన ప్రేమను అభివృద్ధి చేసుకున్నచో దానికి మించిన ముక్తి మార్గము ఏదీ లేదు. అట్లుకాక ఎక్కడో ఏకాంతములో ముక్కుమూసుకొని కూర్చున్న గుణములను జయించుటెట్లు వీలగును? జయించితినని తెలియుటెట్లు? చేయునది అంబరీష భక్తి, చేతలు దూర్వాసములైన దూర్వాసగతే ప్రాప్తించును. కడకు అంబరీషుని పాదాక్రాంతుడు కాక మానడు. అట్లు త్రిశంకులు కాక నిజమైన స్థానమును పొంది నిత్య సత్యమును అనుభవింతురుగాక.
ఆఫ్ ద 9 టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్, నామస్మరణ ఆర్ చాంటింగ్ ద నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ ఇస్ ది బెస్ట్. ఇన్ కలియుగ ద నేమ్ ఇస్ ద పాత్ ఫర్ సేవింగ్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్. జయదేవ, గౌరంగ, త్యాగయ్య, తుకారాం, కబీర్, రామదాస్, all these great devotees attain the Lord through chanting of the name. Do we need any more substantiation? Even Prahlada and Dhruva were able to enjoy the darshan, sparshan and sambhashan of the Lord through chanting of the name only. Therefore, if every sadhaka considers the name of the Lord as the very breath of his life, takes the vow of service and cultivates equal love for all, then there can be no better path for mukti or liberation. Instead of this, if one sits in some solitary nook and holds his breath, how can he master his qualities? How is he to know that he has mastered them? His devotion may be like Ambarisha, but his actions will be like Durvasa. And the combination of these two will result in the fate ending up like that of Durvasa. Durvasa must fall at the feet of Ambarisha. May you avoid becoming such Trishankus. May you attain your true destination and experience the eternal truth.
So that is the fourth segment of chapter 30. And I think here in this chapter, we see Swami coming back to basics, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Back to the power of the name.
Yes. Right. In fact, I remember one Swami narrating, perhaps in a Trai session, the importance of chanting the name and why the name and the name versus form and all that. And there Swami said, see, suppose I have to call someone and then, you know, if I describe, bring me that person, you know, who is wearing that blue shirt and who has that hair which is combed backwards and who is slightly hefty and who is smiling a little. You know, if I give all these descriptions, it is one way to find that person. The person who goes out looking for that person will really find it difficult. It's going to take time. But on the other hand, if he just says the name,
right,
then immediately, you know, that person can identify. So Swami said that is how the name works. You just call out to the name, then it is very clear. It goes direct.
Very true, very true.
And of course, I think I was talking to there is Srinivas Chettiar, sir, who the son of Subramanyam Chettiar,
right,
who was Bhagwan's instrument in installing so many idols and building the Gayatri Temple and Subramanya Temple and all these beautiful structures in Prashanthi Nilayam. And when I was talking to him about how this whole Paduka Trust began, he said that many years ago, sometime in early 90s, maybe 94, Swami once asked Subramanya Chettiar, "How are you?" And he said, "I am fine, Swami." And Swami said, "Ah, why will you not be fine? You have got hold of the name."
Oh.
And the feet. You've got hold of the Lord's feet and you've got hold of the name. Why will you not be fine?
Beautiful, beautiful.
So I think all the examples that Swami is giving here, Jayadeva, Gauranga, Tyagaraja, Tukaram, Kabiram, all of them got hold of the name.
Absolutely.
And they had blissful lives.
You know, of the different forms of meditation, if you go through Swami's Dhyanavahini, the first chapter itself, Swami says, and the entire stretch of Dhyanavahini, which is actually one of the most beautiful books, Dhyanavahini is something which is so beautifully Swami has brought out so many points. In fact, I remember so vividly the first sentence of Dhyanavahini. He says, there are only two types of actions, actions that bind and actions that liberate.
Wow.
Actions that bind and actions that liberate. That's all.
Actions that take you towards God and actions that take you away from God.
So, that's beautiful book. The form of meditation that Swami is speaking of, because it is Dhyanavahini, it is about meditation. But nowhere in the book, Swami has mentioned meditation without Namasmarana.
Really?
In that book? Yes. That was one thing which I found very, very, you know, unique and very, very beautiful. Because Swami, throughout the book, everywhere Swami says, Om should be chanted. Following Om, the name of the form of God, which you love and adhere and worship, that name should be chanted. And as that name is being chanted, you should visualize the form of the Lord in your mind's eye. And then so beautifully Swami has, in several other interactions, Swami has said, you can reveal my form in your meditation. You know, start with my hair.
Yes.
And then as you keep chanting his name, you start with my hair. And then you come to my forehead. And then you come to my eyes. And this is something Brother Sonam shared with us when Swami was in Chennai with all of them in Sundaram. So what happened was, Swami was sitting and talking to all the boys. And Brother Sonam was sitting right next, near Swami's feet. And Swami was sitting on the chair and all the students were sitting around. And he was touching Swami's feet and closing his eyes. And Swami looked down and said, "Hey, kai ko sota hai? why are you sleeping?" And he opened his eyes and he said, he was just smiling. And the warden came to his rescue. He said, "Swami, this is Sonam does a lot of meditation." So and Swami said, "Kuch nahi karta hai, only sleeping." Then he said, "Sach bolo."
Oh my God.
Tell the truth. He said, "Swami, I don't know what anta time waste, Swami said.
Oh.
Then he said, "Swami, you please tell us what we should do, how to do meditation." Then Swami said, "It's very simple." First question he asked, after that he asked, "Do you have faith in this form, in me?" Swami ke upar vishwas hai, he asked. "Do you have faith in this form? Do you have faith in me?" He said, "Yes, Swami." Then Swami said, "Then it is very simple for you. Because this whole form has been taken only for your sake. I have assumed this form, I have taken over this form, I have taken up this form only for your sake, for nobody else." Swami said, "Sit straight, chant Om, chant my name, and then slowly reveal the form in your mind's eye. Start seeing the hair, then come to the forehead, Then come to my eyes. Swami said, do you find such eyes anywhere else in the world? Swami is describing the beauty of his own form. Mm. And he's saying, see this nose. And see the bridge on top of my nose. Mm. Where do you find such a nose? Mm. And then come to my smile. That I need not talk. I'm just saying, but Swami was...
Yeah.
In fact, describing the beauty of his own form as if it is something else, you know, like it was a very beautiful.
Wow.
But he was telling, but this form has been assumed only for your sake, for the devotee's sake.
Mm.
And then he said, you see this chin, only God can have this kind of a chin. And see the beauty of this whole face.
Mm.
Now, after you finish the face, come straight down to the feet.
Mm.
Swami said, I have made it so simple for you, I have worn this robe. So that after the face, you come directly to the feet. You need not think about anything else. Then look at my feet. Then from the feet, again go up to my face. Swami said, Dekho, if you are devotee of Lord Shiva, by the time you start imagining Ganga, then you have to imagine moon, then you have to imagine snake. Oh, if you have forgotten that Rudraksha, again you have to go back. And by the time you imagine all this, you will fall asleep. And Swami said, that's why I have come with such a simple form. Simple form, so that you can easily imagine, you can easily relate to. And then from top to toe, toe to top. That's all. Keep going up and down.
Wow. So, as you chant the name, this is the way to make the chanting potent.
Absolutely.
So it should not be just mechanical chanting. And I think all these devotees, that's what they did. I think you look at the lives of any of these devotees, Tyagaraja, they say that he chanted 9 crore times Rama Nama, and at the end of it, Rama manifested.
Right.
And that is how... He started composing all these beautiful kritis, and that's how the Carnatic music came into being. And of course, here when Swami is giving the example of Ambarisha and Durvasa, that is what Swami is trying to tell here, that you, if you are doing this mechanically, and if that chanting is not leading on to your purification, then you will be in that Trishanku stage. You will be neither here nor there. Because I remember talking to someone else about how even when you chant the name, if you are chanting the name, you know, very sad, with a very sad disposition, with no energy, if you are chanting very unhappy, the name also will not do anything to you. I mean, yeah, because they say that if... Only when you chant the name with happiness, with positivity, then you actually create a cover of protective energy around you. No other dark energies can actually touch you. But even if you're chanting the name and you feel, I'm chanting the name all the time, but how could this happen to me? It's because probably you are not chanting the name with the delight of chanting the name. I mean, all these devotees, you know, even look at Prahlada, for example. You know, even if he's thrown from the mountains, he's singing in joy. You know, even when there are serpents put on his unleashed on his body, he's in bliss.
Right.
I think that is what Swami also constantly was telling us. You know, when you sing bhajans, when you are chanting the name, when you are doing namasmarana, do it with that energy, do it with that. I think, and the brightest example of that was when Swami singing bhajans, isn't it? I mean, you are so euphoric, divine euphoria when Swami was singing. I mean, that is the sort of energy, that is a sort of ecstasy, that is a sort of delight in which we should be when we chant the name. Then, you know, you can experience the bliss of the divine, you can experience the protection of the divine and the benediction of the divine the way Prahlada and Dhruva experience. Swami says you will be able to enjoy darshan, sparshan, sambhashan, everything you will experience just through namasmarana.
But there is an important point here. You know what happens? There is another place where I read this beautiful analogy Swami gives. And he says that suppose you have a disease, you have a cough, you have a cold, or you have fever. He says, what do you take? You take the lozenges, which you keep sucking. You know, you keep it, you chew it, and then, you know, slowly the juice of the lozenges goes into you. It soothes your throat. And then it cures the cold. It cures your throat infection. And he says, the Lord's name is like that.
Hmm.
it's not like quick fix. It's not like, chalo, let me chant 108 names. Let me do it. I have done two times 108 names. So what is my reward now? It's not like this thing. But he says, as you keep chanting, so I think this is something which any of us would like to start the Namasmarana with a very, I would say, reverential approach.
Yes.
Lot of humility and love and reverence. If you want to start chanting that name, let us not get discouraged. Let us not get disheartened that, you know, I have been chanting the name for 1 year, 2 years. Continuously I have been chanting the name. Whenever I get a free moment, I have chanted the name. Nothing is happening to me. Nothing is happening to me. Like, people can get discouraged. People can feel that, you know, why such a thing is not happening. But Swami says, it has to become a part of you.
Yes.
And it takes time. He says, the more you keep chanting and you start enjoying the Lord's name. I heard somewhere, I'm not sure where, on what reference, he said, what the sign of a devotee who is absolutely, you know, fructified, or who is matured, a matured devotee, the moment he hears the name of the Lord, he will shed tears. Yeah, bliss. So that stage, to reach that stage, a continuous Namasmarana needs to happen. It's like Swami would say, it's like the churning of this thing, you know. More and more you churn the wood, the fire comes out.
Yes.
So it's like that. So you have to churn. And in this 1991 discourse, very beautifully, this is a discourse from the summer course, which Swami gave on May 21st, 1991. I think it is the second discourse in the series of the summer course, 1991 discourse. Today we are talking about Namasmarana and we are talking about chanting God's name related to a form that we have been told existed or we have seen. Like in Swami's case, we have seen Swami. And we have been told about Lord Rama, we have been told about Lord Krishna or Ganesha or Shiva, anybody. How many of us have actually seen that form? And here we have seen Swami's form. Some of them have seen Shirdi Baba's form. Whatever, like you can take, or some people have seen their guru's form and whatever. But this discourse, Swami very beautifully, you know, starts from the beginning of creation. He starts from the beginning of creation. And the first poem that he says, God is eminent in the creation.
Imminent
in the creation. And he says, the universe is reflected in the creator. He says, the God and the creation are bound as friends. They are like friends. God is in the creation is in God. Now, in this discourse, what is very beautiful is, Swami very clearly explains that the name was first attributed to God. The name started being attributed to God. He said, when human beings came on this earth, they had everything. Like, they started discovering what were their needs. They started discovering that, okay, the first need that when you're born is hunger. You need to eat. You need to survive. So, you know, the first thing that you start contemplating is food. You have to eat something to keep the body going. He says, man has created machines, computers and everything, but he cannot create food and water. He said he cannot create food and... So, he says, then when he started requiring food, when he started wanting the, you know, to sustain himself, he went into agriculture. Now, when he went into agriculture, he said, what is it that is supporting the agriculture, the plants? Then he looked at the sun. He said, that is how the Gayatri Mantra came.
Oh, wow.
And then he said, when he looked at the sun, he said, this sun, which is being run by hydrogen and helium, of course, at that time he didn't know it was hydrogen and helium. Nevertheless, the power that runs the sun, the power that runs this water, that is beyond me. So man realized that power is beyond me, and he started attributing names to different forms of nature. And he said that this is an aspect of God. This is an attribute of God. He said names like Aditya, He said, yes. Aditya was the name. Then he says, Vishnu, when the light is pervading everywhere, he felt God is also pervading everywhere. Vishnu with all pervasive. Then he said, Ishvara. He said, Ishvara is the one who is, one who has all the sakala Aishwaryas.
Yes.
All prosperity, all.
So the man, in different ways, man is trying to give, create words which will help describe
exactly
that supernatural force,
yes,
which is completely beyond him.
Exactly. He says Sambhava, then he says Isha, then he says, Aprameya. So all these names which man has given to God, they were like one aspect, attribute of God. So these names were given to God's attributes. Because, you know, when there is unmanifested divinity, there is no manifestation, there is no name or form.
Yes.
So the first manifestation of God is a name. I think then the form comes. In a very beautiful description, Swami says in one of the discourses, when somebody asks Lord Rama that, you know, how you were able to do these extraordinary things, how was Lord Hanuman able to fly over just chanting your name? And Swami says, what is it that protected Mother Sita when she was in the midst of only the name of Lord Rama? Only the name of Lord Rama is what protected. And finally, the icing on the cake, Lord Rama says, I could achieve all this because this body is named Rama.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Swami says in one of his discourses, he says, this body which is named Rama is able to achieve all this because the name is so powerful. Rama, Swami gives the original of Rama, Rama, how the name is from the Panchakshari and the...
Yes.
So, he says, this body is named Rama, it's because of the power of the name.
Wow. That, you know, talking about Rama, you cannot but recall Hanuman. The greatest example of
Namasmarana,
the power
true
of Namasmarana. I mean, when you read the Ramayana, you know that what Rama himself could not achieve, Hanuman achieved chanting Rama's name.
Right.
And of course, you have that beautiful episode of how Hanuman did not want any gift that does not resonate with the Ramanama, and how every hair of his being was chanting that name, Rama, Rama, Rama. And I mean, that is the stage to which perhaps every person who is on the spiritual path, who is on this path of devotion, Swami says, of the 9 types of devotion, Namasmarana is the best. So it should become so much a part of our being, like every breath, you are consciously or unconsciously all the time chanting.
Very true. In fact, when you are talking about Hanuman's constant chanting of the Lord's name, you know, there is that beautiful story which Swami says. So does that mean that, you know, we are going, we keep chanting Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Om Shri Sai Ram, we keep chanting. You need not show it to others. It should be an internal chanting.
Yes.
And when you are doing an internal chanting of Om, for example, that automatically connects you with the resonance, with the sound in the entire cosmos. And why are we chanting? Why are we chanting a name? See, first of all, in this 1991 discourse, Swami gives very beautifully, he says, the tamas should be changed into rajas. The rajas should be changed into sattvic. So your mind, which is involved in only sleep and food and tamas, that should be changed into rajas. And he says, when you chant the name, it is like constantly chanting with the image of the form. He says that changes the tamas into rajas.
So from laziness, from slumber, you become active.
You become active.
Yes.
And you become, that is rajas.
Yes.
At the same time, you keep chanting and you internalize the name and you internalize the sound of Om. And he says, then you go into sattvic.
Wow.
So it becomes a part that once you are in sync with that sound and the cosmos, he says, then your actions become absolutely based on the sattvic quality or the you know, the purity of sattvic nature.
That is everyone's journey, spiritual journey, isn't it? We have to constantly work to sublimate our tendencies. And we all are filled with this mixture of tamas, rajas and sattva. And always the endeavor is to increase the proportion of sattva.
Absolutely.
The portion of rajas and tamas.
So when we're talking about this, that one more beautiful story which Swami says about the king.
Yes.
You know, I think it's there in the first chapter or second chapter of Satya Sai Speaks. So there is this king and there is his queen who is very, very devoted to Lord Rama. She keeps chanting, doing puja. She is like all the time worshipping Lord Rama, chanting his name. And the king just smiles at her and then he keeps going. He doesn't stop one second to sit and do puja and all that. And she likes the king a lot, and the king is very dharmic, very good person. But she's all the time upset. She says, why can't he chant the name of Lord Rama? What is he going to lose? Why the devotion, the bhakti to Lord Rama has not inspired him? Why it has not touched his heart? And so she would always keep praying and wondering. And then one day, the king got up, woke up in the morning, and suddenly he saw tremendous activity, lot of decoration, festoons, celebrations, everything going on. And the wife is happy and she is bringing sweets and distributing and everything. And he is like totally shocked, and I asked her, what is all this? Why is this happening? And she says that, you know, in your sleep, you chanted the name of Rama 3 times, Rama, Rama, Rama. And the king felt so upset and sad. And she said, it's all right. Why are you so sad? Then he says that, you know, 3 times I have chanted the name of the Lord outside.
Oh.
I have let it out.
It's like a precious
thing. It is the most precious thing which has to be safeguarded in the deepest recesses of my heart. It is the light of my life. It is in the deepest recesses of Payoji Mene Naam Ratan Dan Payo, as Swami says. It is the most precious. It's like something which has to be very, very personal and deep inside you. He says, I feel so bad that 3 times I have, you know, chanted it outside for others to see. So then she realized that, my God, I am nowhere close to his devotion.
Oh, amazing. And what the way his reverence for Rama and the way he was treasuring the Ramanama in his heart, and how that Ramanama had inspired him to do so much dharma. I think that is the most beautiful part. Once you have the name of the Lord installed in your heart, then automatically your actions become pure. As we said, you know, from tamas you move to rajas, and from rajas you move to sattva. In fact, the story here which Bhagwan is referring to here of Durvasa and Ambarisha,
right,
is also the same, essence, isn't it?
Correct, correct. Durvasa embodies rajas.
Rajas.
And Ambarisha is sattvic.
And sattvic, yes. And perhaps we should narrate this story, not many will be familiar with this.
Please do, really.
So
the only source of the story was Amar Chitra Katha when I
because now there are so many websites.
So let's go on to Google Guru and find out.
They say that in today's times, for any question in the world,
right,
you have an answer. Google has an answer for everything possible in the world, except knowing yourself.
Is it?
Except, you know, answers from within.
Right, that of course.
Except that. Otherwise, Google has answers for everything. So, I mean, I also read this story. I looked up on the net. So, you have King Ambarisha, who was a very pious king.
I think King Ambarisha was also one of the ancestors of Lord Rama, right?
Yes, Ikshvaku
clan, yes.
Ikshvaku,
that's
clan,
right.
Yes. And so he was known for his piety, he was known for his dharmic nature, he was someone who was loved by all the people, and it is said that Indra got a little flustered because he felt, oh my God, this person is so good, and this person has amassed so much of merit. Lord Vishnu was so happy with Ambarisha that he, in fact, gifted his own Sudarshana Chakra to him.
Oh, okay.
So Lord Vishnu said that you are such a beautiful person, and you know, he wanted to gift his most protective, you know, most powerful weapon, which is, I mean, you identify Vishnu with Sudarshana Chakra. That's what, I mean, it also shows, you know, how the Lord can go to any extent, you know.
Correct.
If you really win his heart, if you're really that good, you know, you even God just wants to be at your service. So that is how Vishnu gave a Sudarshana Chakra to Ambarisha, and that only made Indra more miserable. And what had happened was Ambarisha had embarked on a fast. So he was fasting on Ekadashi day for the whole of that year. And so there were auspicious times when he would begin, and at an auspicious time there were pandits who would say this is the right time to break the fast. And so Indra felt that, you know, if he completes this whole vow with absolute sincerity, the way he was doing, and there are all likelihood that he will accomplish it, you know, it'll make his position even more shaky. So he goes to Durvasa, and so they say that Durvasa, because of his nature, short-tempered nature, not many people go to him. You know, somebody had written this story interestingly, and you know, he felt very happy that someone has actually come to see him and spend time with him. And so Durvasa is very happy, and so then Indra says that, you know what, I have heard about this Ambarisha, and he's, oh, Durvasa says, yeah, I know, and he says he's doing this, wow, he's a very great soul, and he's really very powerful, and, you know, maybe there's no person on earth like him, and maybe you should visit him, you know. And Durvasa says, yes, yes, I think when he completes this vow, I should be there with him. And so that is how Durvasa comes along with his band of disciples. And he lands up on the day when in 2 hours he is supposed to break his fast. And the pundits have, you know, made all the arrangements, and so Durvasa lands up there, and Ambarisha is very happy that, you know, on such an auspicious time, the great sage Durvasa has come to him. So he extends all hospitality, and Durvasa says, no, I will just go to the river and I will refresh myself and I will come back, and then together we will break the fast. And Ambarisha says, what else can be a greater fortune? You know, I'm completing this year-long penance and you're there with me. I mean, it's God sent that you are here. And Durvasa says, okay, so let me come back in a quick time. And Durvasa goes and something happens, his arrival gets delayed, and the auspicious time has approached, and the pundits tell Ambarisha that, you know, you have to break your fast at this time, because otherwise you lose the merit, the fruits of all the penance that you have done for over the year. So he says, no, 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 I cannot do this. You know, the great sage, he will definitely not be happy. We will do it together. That's what we discussed. So I will wait. He says, no, 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 you can't do that. You know, you have to, the time is, we're losing time, so you have to break your fast now. And he says, no, I will not do it. I cannot slight such a great sage. And then the pundits think through and say, okay, there is a alternate method. So you just take one drop of water, you know, just put one tulasi leaf, that's all. Just one drop of water on your tongue. So don't eat anything, you know. So only when he comes, you know, then you can have, there's a big banquet arranged, you know, the king has finished his penance and everything. And so finally, reluctantly, Ambarisha agrees for that. And so he places the tulasi leaf on his tongue, and just when he's finished doing that, that is when Durvasa comes along with his disciples. And he says, you have insulted me. You said that we will together break the fast, and this is how you respect a great sage like me, and this is absolute sacrilege. And you know, and that is when Ambarisha says, you know, I didn't know what to do. You know, I have not, we will have it together. I have not broken the fast. You know, we have made all the arrangements. We are just waiting for you, but I had to just do. No, he says, I don't listen to all this. You have not kept your word. And in that moment of fury, he's, Durvasa just takes one strand of hair,
okay,
and he throws it on the ground, and there emerges a demoness, and he orders the demon to vanquish Ambarisha.
Oh, okay.
And so immediately all the soldiers of Ambarisha, they come forward to protect the king, and Ambarisha says, you don't do anything, you all of you please go back. And when the this demon is trying to harm Ambarisha, suddenly the whirling sound of Sudarshana Chakra, and the chakra comes, and the chakra immediately kills this demoness. And after that,
starts chasing
Durvasa. Because, you know, the mandate for the Sudarshan Chakra is to always protect Ambarisha. So, which is the source which caused all the pain to Ambarisha? So, it is Durvasa, because it is from Durvasa that the demoness emerged. So, it goes after Durvasa, and then Durvasa runs in sheer panic, and he goes to, they say, Mount Kailasha, and he asks Lord Mahadeva, please save me from Sudarshana Chakra. I don't know what to do. Lord Shiva says, I cannot do. I am helpless with Sudarshana Chakra. You go to Brahma. He is a creator. Maybe he will tell you what to do. So, he runs to Brahma Loka, and there Brahma says, oh, this is Sudarshana Chakra. I have nothing to do with it. You know, the person who has given the Sudarshana Chakra is Lord Vishnu himself. Maybe he's the only person who can calm the Sudarshana Chakra. I am absolutely helpless with this. So you go to Vaikuntha. So he runs to Vaikuntha, and Chakra is chasing him. And there, when he falls at the feet of Vishnu and says, you know, you have to save me. Chakra is about to just behead me. And Vishnu says, see, I cannot do anything because, you know, I have already given it.
Correct.
I have given it to Ambarisha. So, it will just do what it is told to do. It is supposed to protect Ambarisha. So, even though it belongs to me, but I am a servant of the devotee. So, I cannot do anything. So, finally, you know, he has to come back to Ambarisha. And they say that Ambarisha was still standing at the same position, waiting for Durvasa to break the fast. That was the
steadfastness.
And finally, when Durvasa comes and falls at the feet of Ambarisha, and that is when he pleads with Ambarisha for his life, and then Ambarisha tells the Sudarshana Chakra that I have the same respect, the same reverence for Durvasa the way I always had. So, O Sudarshana Chakra, please return and please do not harm Durvasa. And that is how the chakra of anger and ego of Durvasa is cut. But I think what Swami is telling here is your devotion may be like Ambarisha, but your action should not be like Durvasa. You cannot say that, you know, I am chanting the name of the Lord, but at the slightest inconvenience, you losing your temper. You cannot say that I am going for bhajans every Thursday, but the moment I step out of the bhajan Sai Center and I see that someone has taken away my slippers, I just, you know, go into...
Why go that far? Inside the bhajan itself, we have our own issues. Like, who's singing better? I'm singing better. Why that person is singing?
Why that person's... When he sang, there's a good following. When I'm singing, why there is no...
Etc. So, here, this sentence Swami says is, like, very beautiful. He says, therefore, if every sadhaka will consider the name of the Lord as the very breath of his life, and having complete faith in good deeds and good thoughts, if he will develop the spirit of service and equal love for all, then there can be no better path for mukti.
Yeah, that is the sum and substance
of the entire thing, because equal love for all and service is something which, you know, it is the manifestation of bhakti.
Correct.
Like when you are having, your heart is filled with bhakti, love all, serve all.
Yes.
That serve all, that service comes into play. And you know, Swami says, the name and the form of the Lord are like the two sides of a coin.
Yes.
And there can be so many names. You can take any name, you can take any form, you can take any this thing. In fact, when you go to some of the very famous mosques, Allah is, there's no form.
Yes.
There's no form for Allah. But there are names. There are names. I think there are 108 names of Allah. And so there is an attribution of attributes to the attributeless.
Absolutely.
So,
for still to think about Allah, you need a direction.
You need some attribute, you need some quality, you need some manifestation to, you know, kind of relate to that concept of God. So, even there you have names of God. And in fact, so Swami says, God has so many names. God has so many names. And he gives a beautiful analogy in one of the earlier discourses. Swami says, but you should stick to one name and form which you love. He says, for example, this is like a lady living in a joint family. Swami says, in a joint family, you have your brother-in-law, you have your brother-in-law's father, you have your husband's nephews, then you have different uncles, you have a grandfather, you have so many things. But she will be loving to all of them. She'll be nice to all of them. But she will be, you know, loyal only to her husband. She will always think only of her husband. She will not think of other people in the joint family. So Swami says, so also there are many names of God. There are so many names, thousands of names. But you select one.
Yes.
And you be, you know, loyal to that. That one name and that one form, if you are loyal to that, then that will save you.
But how Bhagavan is to say that, you know, if you are constantly changing your principal deity, only because, you know, you feel, oh, this has not worked, so maybe let me try something else. Swami says it is like if you want water and you're digging multiple wells and all the wells are shallow, you're not going to get water from any of the wells. All you have to do instead is put all the energies in digging one well deeper. Then you will have water. I think that is what when Bhagavan started this Satyasaya organization itself, that's what he said. If you are a Hindu, be a better Hindu. If you are a Muslim, be a better Muslim. If you are a Christian, be a better Christian.
True.
In fact, when you mentioned about this, how you always need an attribute and mosque, I was just reminded of Guru Nanak Ji. Because Guru Nanak Ji, again, is someone whom Swami used to very fondly talk about as the person who started the Namasmarana, the bhajan tradition. The bhajan tradition. And I was reading some of interesting tales from his life.
Okay.
And apparently when he had gone to Mecca,
okay,
there is this story of how he used to talk to different people there. You know, he had gone with his companion Mardana. And so all the people who used to come in contact with him, they used to feel very happy talking to him.
You know?
They used to feel so much joy, and the kind of things that he used to share at that point in time, they felt that this is all everything, you know, what our religion also preaches. At that time, Sikhism, of course, was not there. You know, just like we know that, you know, Guru Nanak did not start Sikhism.
Right.
Jesus did not start Christianity. So, he was just trying to share all the beautiful teachings of the eternal divine. And he goes to one house, and so this person asks him, so you have come from a strange country. He says, yeah, I have come from Hindustan. And so you have come from Hindustan, and so you have come for the darshan for Mecca. He says no, I am not a Muslim, but I have come because, you know, I like this pilgrimage. So that person becomes very happy. So you're not even a Muslim, because Muslims have to do it mandatorily. But, you know, still you have undertaken this difficult journey in those days. You know, we're talking about probably in the 13th, 14th century. You know, in those days, or much earlier, you have come all the way. You are so much in tune with the divine. And he says, you are welcome to stay in my house. And so that Muslim person calls him, and so they have satsang there and everything. And so one night, because that house was small, so it was getting a little stuffy. So Guru Nanak Ji went out and he slept on a cot. And since he did not have good sleep in the night, so early in the morning also, when even that azan started, you know, Muslim prayer started, he was still sleeping. And then someone noticed that what Guru Nanak Ji was doing was absolute sacrilege.
Right.
Because they said that his feet were towards the Kaaba.
Kaaba, yes.
Okay. And so some person saw that and they said, no, how can he do this? You know, who is this person? And so immediately the word spread around.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was one person who was very orthodox and, you know, so they sent that word to whatever the head there. And so this person also comes and they know that, you know, once he comes, you know, he will surely punish.
Mm.
So they call him. And so he also sees and he says, how could you do this? This is absolute insult and you are a kafir, you know. You are someone who has insulted the divine. And so the Guru Nanak says, yeah, I am, he's very apologetic. He says that this was not my intention. But you just tell me something. You just tell me where God is not there, you know, and please turn my foot to that side.
To that side.
To that side. Then, you know, so that is how the
master.
Yeah, the master gives his message, and that's how the transformation also happens. And there's another very interesting anecdote. After that, Guru Nanak moves to Medina, from Mecca to Medina, and then from there he comes to Baghdad. And in Baghdad, so here he's staying in again a devotee's place, and he finds that town to be very quiet, very peaceful. And you know, whenever Guru Nanak used to sing, the Mardana used to play that instrument called Rabab. So it was always together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always their singing that really captured people. And so one day, you know, they were singing and playing, and all the people there, they used to be so lost that slowly people used to gather and he would give prasadam to everyone who came. And so one of the persons there asked, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, no, we are travelers from Hindustan. We have come to visit the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, and we are now on our way home. And so there were some youngsters, and they asked, okay, so what is it that you are singing? He said, no, we are singing a song in praise of the Supreme Being. And singing is an essential part of our worship. That's what Guru Nanak says. And these boys looked at each other. And one of the elders said that, you know, but you must forgive us if we find your form of worship strange. Because, you know, according to orthodox Islam, music does not form a part of worship.
Okay.
And so the boys didn't know how to react, so they go back. And now, you know, the word spreads around that here is Guru Nanak. Of course, they didn't know him as Guru Nanak. So here is this Nanak and his friend. And they are doing something which is against orthodox Islam. You know, they are singing and they are playing music. And so this spread like wildfire through the town. And so there were flames of anger and hostility. And it was only from those people who thought were the custodians of the orthodox form of Islam. And so this was going on. So in the evening, there were a lot of hostile people who came and surrounded Guru Nanak. And Guru Nanak began to sing like always. And as they heard him sing and as they heard the sweetness of his voice, somehow their anger just melted away and they found themselves looking uncomfortably at the stones that they were holding. They had come with stones.
My God.
Because to punish, because he was going against orthodox Islam. And now, you know, even though they had the stones, they were not in a position to do what they have been asked to do. And at some one hot-headed person, you know, everyone is waiting for one person to do it. You know, then everyone will just follow. There's
correct.
A group of people, a mob with stones in the hand. But not one had the courage to throw. And then suddenly, Guru Nanak, after he finishes that song, he breaks into azan.
Oh, okay.
And that azan is so melodious that none of them have ever heard the azan so soothing.
Okay.
And they say that, you know, they have heard azan 1,000 times before, but there was something so special about it. It was so sweet, so pure, like the waters of a mountain spring. And it had the poignancy of the longing of a devotee for the beloved. So that was something they did not know how to react. Here he was doing the azan, but he was doing it so melodiously. And even the non-Muslims and even the most orthodox, they just became like babies in front of him because of the power of the music. And I think, you know, what Guru Nanak demonstrated through his life, Swami is giving us, all of us, this chance to recreate that in our lives by bringing back this tradition of bhajan singing. And I think when you talk about namasmarana, the beautiful form of namasmarana is bhajans.
absolutely, that is a whole chapter and a whole session on of its own.
Yes.
And the power of bhajans and how it,
yes,
you know, the nama sankirtan.
Yes.
In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, amongst all the forms of penance, I am japa.
Wow.
I am japa.
And
so
bhajans is japa, but in a very interesting manner, very melodious manner.
Right.
So, there is, in fact, today I was listening to the talk of Brother Balram Chandran during the spiritual conference. You know, he was saying that how in every bhajan, you know, if there are 3 minutes of bhajan, it is not just the lead singer. The lead singer is singing only half. Everyone is singing the other half. You know, he's singing only 1.5 minutes and everybody else is singing 1.5 minutes. I think that is the power of collective singing. And I think all these devotees, be it Tyagaraja, thanks to Tyagaraja, we have the whole tradition of bhakti music.
Correct.
You know, take Tukaram, take Kabir, take Jayadeva. All of them started branches of devotional music. They have left with us a series of compositions and a tradition of music.
Absolutely.
To connect with the divine.
So beautiful. The power of the name.
Yes.
It's so small and so powerful.
Yes.
And so complete. Yes. In Dhyanavaini, Swami says, people may laugh at you if you tell them that your sadhana is only namasmarana. So don't tell them. Because if you tell them, they may ridicule you and you may feel bad. But I am giving you the guarantee that this is enough.
Yes. And I think the people who once experience the power of it and they know the profundity of it, just like that king, they want to keep it to themselves.
Right. Absolutely.
They don't want to lose it. And because you have got this Nama Ratna Dhan Payo, as you beautifully said, we can endlessly talk about namasmarana. I think there is no end to the glory of the Lord and the glory of the Lord's name. So dear listeners, we'll continue this in the coming episodes. There is lot more to chapter 30 of Prema Vahini. Probably we have done only half of it. It's a very long chapter, and by Swami's grace, let's spend and dwell our everything into this, so that by the time we finish this Prema Vahini satsang, at least we would have moved from this tamas to rajas to sattva. Whatever, in whichever composition tamas, rajas and sattva are there in our being, they move to a stage where we have more sattva, less rajas and less tamas, and one day become beyond the gunas. That's what Swami says. Guru is the one who takes us beyond the gunas, and where we become one with the gunatita. So thank you so much for being with us through this session. As always, if you have anything to share with us, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org, offering this lovely satsang at his feet and thanking him for this beautiful opportunity. We bring this day-long Thursday live session to a close. Thank you so much. Sayonara.